670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, let's go. You're on with Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Yep. Your boy got shot last night. I did. Heartbroken, I am. Many have asked, so I just thought I'd just start there. And I appreciate those that have reached out, you know, with genuine concern for me. Because a lot of folks were trolling. You know how that comes to when the NFL team loses? And be them same folks that in the first half were saying, oh, y'all look good. And probably believed it. I thought I had Cinderella the way that thing started. And I've told everybody that's reached out. That thing turned back into a pumpkin, didn't it? On Ben Johnson and the Chicago Bears last night. Another big comeback. Bills, Sunday night. Vikings, last night. We will break it all down. What does it mean? Is the larger takeaway about the Vikings? Or is it about the Bears? John sits here 1-0. He can sit back a king. He's my brother and my partner. And right now, he sits above them all at 1-0.
Well,
congrats.
I don't look at it like that. I look at it like we're on 1-0 street. We're on 1-0 street.
I remember those days.
And you're on 0-1 street.
I know.
And I'm battling today, as you guys will be able to hear. My house is just nothing but a Petri dish all the time. My kid had hand, foot, and mouth disease in his class.
Oh, I read the story.
So let's hope that I'm not bringing that into the studio. But I thought it was just a, you know, I mean, two NFL primetime games, Sunday and Monday, right? On Sunday, the Ravens look like the best team in the history of the NFL. For three quarters, they lose. J.J. McCarthy looks like the worst quarterback in the history of the league for three quarters. And then and the fourth quarter inexplicably turns into prime Fran Tarkenton and wins. I just can't really explain the last two primetime games.
It's the NFL, and you love it. You gave us a speech yesterday.
Don't ever turn your back on the Shield.
A lot of folks went to bed again last night.
17-6.
Same thing.
Yep. That's, I mean, they were driving. They had a chance to put it at least a 20-6. And that felt like that would have been it. And then, of course, you know, holding penalty and Santos. Oh, weak leg, peg leg,
don't
Santos.
Come in here. I knew this. See, that's why I knew this might be a struggle today.
I'm not going to rub it in.
Because at some point, you're going to turn troll.
I'm not going to rub it in. Although, I do think there were some critical coaching mistakes from Ben Johnson. No
Thank
question
you.
About it. No question.
I'm seeing too much of everything's on Caleb.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to break down from that game, and it's you know, it's a lesson in just how quick it can flip on you in the league, man. It can flip on you in the same game, let alone a season, you know.
I'm not gonna cry about this. We suck.
There you go. Can we get a round of applause for this realization?
I mean, give it to me. All we do is fail at quarterback. That's what the Bears do.
He's already 10 of 10.
I don't.
First 10 of 10 start for an NFL, for a Chicago Bear quarterback since 1978.
It's because it was scripted, bro.
Scripted.
He did that for
2 weeks. Scripted. We're going to talk about the script because I think you just hit on it. So we'll get into that today on the show. Jessica Benson is back. We've missed her the last couple weeks.
Praise Jesus. And thank him for safe travel for Jessica.
You know, the irony here is that Jessica is the person who will say, never have a fall wedding, right? Like she would say, don't do that because college football. Yet that's where she's been, you know, the last 2 weeks, attending a fall wedding for 2 weeks. So I think there needs to be some accountability there.
It's just all her friends of that age.
Rules for thee, not for me. I mean, I think that's, you know.
They are worldly.
Yes. Anyway, Jessica Benson's going to join us at 11:25. And then at 1:25, Dan Williams, former Raider, former Arizona Cardinal, former Tennessee Volunteer, is going to get up in here and talk to us about some things, obviously, that he's doing around the city and around the community. Also talk some football as well. So
you should be happy about his balls.
So we'll be very happy. Big weekend for them coming up at the crib.
Like to hear his thoughts on it.
At the crib. So this guy is like the most gentle giant I've ever been around. It's just hard for me to imagine there's another side to him.
But, well, and as you continue to point out, he keeps a black quarterback. But you know what? That's 50-50 now, isn't it?
I guess it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's not
You
really,
just pick one.
Right. Flip a coin.
Because it's half the – now, I don't know if that's still going to be the case. Well, we still got Russell going. We talked about –
Right.
Maybe a conversation for later.
Right. So,
but
anyway,
we're holding strong.
Yeah, he'll join us at 125. So that is the show today. But, yeah, 7-0. Freaking Bears, man. Lowers the shoulder. I didn't even want to text you because I didn't want to contribute to the fervor because I knew that you could not have been feeling any better than you were at that moment when Caleb lowers the shoulder, 7-0. I think you got the ball second too, so you'd already gotten a stop. So I mean, it started perfectly, and that was about the most fun. I don't know, maybe there was the pick six.
Whole first half was fun.
Yeah.
Dominated. I mean, JJ was doing nothing.
Yep. What?
We were in complete control. Up 17-6 in complete control of the game, and you blow another. I think I read from Courtney Cronin, who covers the Bears for ESPN, that it's our fourth blown double-digit lead going in the fourth quarter of the last four seasons. It's twice as many as anybody else, if that's possible. It's what the Bears do. But, again, you were doing it with a new coach, and you were doing it with a quarterback that you hoped he could pull the best out of, right, retrain in a lot of ways. We're talking about things like being under center all the time, getting the ball out and everything else. And back to your point, because I'm always going to bring it back home. The man started 10-10. It looked good. Everything looked great. Now, again, all that's on script. He's been practicing that the last 2 weeks. Jeffrey Wright said it very well. Your best 10 plays, best 12, you've got those ready. That's what you've been working on the last 2 weeks. You're going to give it to the Vikings. So, yeah, that looks great. And here's the thing. Bears didn't score on their opening drive all season last year. So what are we talking about? It's like, for a Bears fan, it's like an oasis in the desert. Felt great. You're absolutely right. And it's amazing how fast that game turned. Justin Jefferson was talking about it afterwards with Scott Van Pelt. Momentum, my goodness. Once the pendulum swung, it was like a gunshot to the heart for Bears fans. And it would not stop. It just transferred all that momentum that you had on the pick six, controlling the game. McCarthy was scared. He can't get the ball out on time. He doesn't know what he's seeing, and everything flipped. And it flipped there in that second half when the Bears failed to put the game away on a drive that, yes, where Cairo misses, and we can blame that on him. But that's where Caleb started getting squirrely. That's where he started resorting back to the old ways. And a guy who was no longer had everything on script. You've had Minnesota's defense make adjustments now. They're getting to him. See that intentional grounding? The stepping out of bounds? So again, it goes back to something we said about the Ravens, but it really applies in Caleb's case. He is so great. He has made the name for himself. He's in the number one pick at the extraordinary, right? You see the pass. He's rolling out right, and he still finds a way to hit. I think that was Rome. Before he goes out of bounds,
yep.
Romer, one of them,
yep.
Like he does that. That's that Patrick Mahomes that folks have. I'm going to be honest with you. Today it feels like have sold themselves on, fooled themselves on. But it's the ordinary. It's what Ben Johnson needs out of him, which you were seeing. Get the ball out. Completion. I don't care if you're checking down. Just get it out. That he struggles with, and when times get tough, he reverts back to I got to make a play. And so that. That's what backed us up on that field goal, but it changed the entire momentum of the game. Forget the Bear woes. That's not so much the story. It's just that is the NFL. And a guy, here's the thing, too, because you saw all this. Even Minnesota fans, J.J. McCarthy was getting absolutely dogged. Folks were saying, bring back Kirk Cousins. This is the worst quarterback in the NFL. What have they done? He was never a passer at Michigan. Believe me, there were parts of me thought it, too. Said, okay, we don't have the worst quarterback in the NFC North. But did you see how O'Connell and those guys, even after throwing the pick six, kept confidence in him? And did you see that man on the sideline going up and down? Basically, at halftime, he said it was on him.
Yep.
But at halftime, he's going up and down the sideline to his guy saying, I got this. Let's go. I saw in one quarter from him where he produces the three touchdowns, more leadership and more of a franchise quarterback than I have seen in 18 games from Caleb Williams.
Absolutely.
It's disappointing.
And that's a fundamental.
But this is going to be a process for me with Caleb to find out if he's capable. You know, it's going to be a, because again, you start 10 for 10.
Right.
But his off-target completion, his off-target percentage the second half, 44%.
He didn't look
He's missing open throws.
He didn't look any different than last year after that first drive, in my opinion. Like he had that perfect first drive, and then he looked exactly like he looked last year. Now, granted, I do the Vikings defense is sick, bro. I mean, I do think we have to leave some possibility that that might be the top
defense. They're a good
defense,
and Brian Flores, who sat back in the first half, probably because he's scared of Ben Johnson.
Yep.
Wants to see what he's got. Ben Johnson tore him up.
Because he unleashed in the fourth.
Ben had torn. I mean, Ben's owned him, in, yeah. You know, as Detroit's guy. Right. He knows what he's going to. And so he sat back, and yes, he unleashed. And that just threw everything. It threw Caleb for a loop, everything. Once again, the plan, the script changes because of what Minnesota is doing and what you're seeing. Caleb reverted back to the guy that, again, look at that intentional grounded where he's just trying to, he runs over his own feet basically and tries to, that's peewee ball. You can't do.
No
like,
doubt.
Reverted back to kids stuff.
Yep.
That I don't know if Ben Johnson is going to be able to coach him out of. Listen, when the Bears, I'll bottom line it this way because y'all remember me before the draft. I said, Jaden Daniels might be the guy. I know we're going. But when we took Caleb Williams, I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to go in with an open mind. You know, we'll see what, and the guy throws for 3,500 yards. It's a Bears record, 20 touchdowns, six. And now you go get an offensive, a guy in Ben Johnson that you figure is an offensive guru. Okay, I'm open minded. Let's see what happens. But last night, and I'm curious if what else you know you thought. But last night, when as I watched J.J. McCarthy get a whole team back behind him and say we're gonna get this done for you. And it come unraveled for Caleb Williams in the opposite way.
Uh-huh.
Never seen him lead like that either. It's Caleb Williams run off a lot of times going to be a flex. This is my first real doubt that this is ever going to be, you know, you can do this. You can coach a good quarterback out of him. I ain't talking about the best. Uh-huh. I ain't talking about being Jaden Daniels, but just get the best. I don't know if you can do it, man. I don't know if you can do it with this dude.
Yeah, I mean, I have my doubts. I don't think you will. I don't look at him and see a guy that's going to be there in 2028. I just don't. I think there were mistakes that Ben Johnson made last night, no doubt about that. Like the out of bounds, like he should have kicked the ball out of bounds, right?
Well,
on that
the
last
first
play.
Half, you kick the field goal. You are not the Lions. You
right.
are not a team that's going to go up and down. You're not proven. You don't have the lines. You are in Chicago. You're still developing this thing. He decides to go for it. On like fourth and kick the field goal. That was one Cairo could have made.
Yep.
It's another 3 points back to Ben Johnson. Other thing, 12 penalties for 127 yards. That's an undisciplined squad.
Yep.
That ain't just on Caleb. That's your entire your whole right side is jumping and holding. So that goes to Ben. Sloppy effort. 12 penalties, 127 is atrocious, bro. And this is after again you'd had control of the game. So you're right. Ben in his first game. You know, there's plenty to criticize him for as well, but ultimately he couldn't keep Caleb calm, couldn't keep the what he said completions complete. Just keep checking it down, bro. Like, don't make the mistakes that set you back. Intentional grounding, stepping out of bounds behind the freaking line, sack for the Vikings. Don't do that stuff. You know, but I don't know. I don't know if he's capable of having that coached out of him because he's been told all of his life you're the next Patrick Mahomes. He's
right.
been crowned. He's one of the first NIL babies.
Right.
You know, guy had $1 million before, you know, anybody else did in college, probably, you know, right there at the start of it. And points being, I've asked this to you, once you've gotten that,
mm-hmm.
how much are you still, right, fighting for in terms of, okay, this is what I got to do to go get it? You know, once you've been crowned, we've talked about that with athletes, in that way, you still want to be the best? You still think you got, you know, more rungs up the ladder to climb, or do you feel like you're a finished product with him? It looks like he thinks that. We'll see. It's one game. You knew it was going to be hot and heavy for a brother that just saw. I mean, we got three generations of Smith. I don't know. I feel terrible that I pulled my son into this pain.
See, I knew that the emotions
Me,
were running too high
son,
down last night.
Grandfather was there. Les Smith is here from Belize. He's white. We're three generations. Think about that opening drive and how the Smith family was feeling. In that living room, looking at Caleb with that ugly gray shirt on.
That fit was
Why
atrocious.
You got that shirt on that's loose at the waist, it's not and it's coming down below the uniform. You know why? You know why, John? Because he wants the attention.
You think that?
He's more concerned with how he looks and the attention and the bags and the nails and looking like a trendsetter and a leader than he is with actually doing it, bro.
The fit was atrocious.
Who? What starting quarterback looks like that? Period.
It was awful.
I said,
awful.
Well, you trying to be punk? You trying to be Jim McMahon, Punky QB, bro? What is this?
That was an awful
fit. But then he went
fit.
10 for 10. I said, you know what? The kids are going to do it too. You keep doing that.
Oh, he's going to start a new wave.
That's what he thinks he is. He thinks he's like a jock kind of guy that can just be a trick. Anything he does is going to catch fire. He's not. He's not. And football is different.
It is different. It is 100% different.
Especially when you're the QB, you got to lead men in that locker room. You got to have them buy in. I don't get the sense that they...
Because let me give you an anecdote here.
Please.
And it happened.
So I can calm down and get my pressure down.
And it happened in the same game. And it's exactly... You kind of have already mentioned it, but at halftime in the game, with J.J. McCarthy having not converted a single third down, going in, down... I guess it wasn't at half. It was right after half, but down 11. J.J. McCarthy goes up to 32-year-old Javon Hargrave and tells him, I got this.
Bro.
And then he throws that pick six. He's going to his offensive lineman. He's saying he thinks things are going to pop. And then in the huddle, when things aren't going their way, he asks his teammates in that huddle, is there any place you'd rather be? Down 11, looking like crap. And then they go on that, fourth quarter comeback.
Keep in mind, this boy is from Chicago, basically. He's back in his hometown. He's down. He's thrown the pick six. Literally all the Vikings, he'd probably feel it in the stadium, but it wasn't just right there and the Bears fans all laughing and jeering and all that. He could probably feel it all through the sidelines, see some doubt. And this dude fought through that and got them back, dude. He got them back on board. O'Connell told him now, apparently, that you're going to win this game for us. Like that, when you got a coach like that that's doing that, that dude, Jeffrey Wright said this morning, he's right. He's a proven quarterback whisperer. We will see on Ben Johnson. But what he did for Darnold last year and what he did for this kid, for keeping this kid's confidence. I don't want to take away from a very impressive performance by the Vikings in terms of the adjustments they made. They're on the road. Everything's going wrong for your rookie quarterback, who he is,
right?
Because he hadn't played a start of a game yet in the regular season. And the way they pulled that back together and made the Bears look like slop in doing so in that fourth quarter was an impressive performance by them.
Yeah.
Again, they don't, you folks concerned about drop-off for them going from Sam Darnold to a quarterback who, yes, he's a national champion and a winner, but he wasn't some passer at Michigan. Ran a run first offense.
No.
And so can he take advantage of the weapons and do everything else? For 2.5 quarters, looked like, nah, he can't do that.
Right.
But they got the wrong one.
But what J.J. McCarthy, I don't know, there's a lot of things that he's not, right? There's a lot of things that he's not. I mean, he didn't look like a prolific passer. He didn't look like a guy that's
going to throw
4,000 yards ever in his career. But here is what J.J. McCarthy is. 64-3 is a starter since high school.
He's a freaking winner.
He's a leader. I mean, that's the trait. That's and there are some quarterbacks in the NFL, Jason, who they don't have the ability, they don't have that raw talent, but they have that. And I mean, like Jalen Hurts to me is that guy, right? Like he's not the greatest pure passer ever, but the guy is an undeniable leader of men. Like people, they rally around him. And I think he might be the white Jalen Hurts. He might kind of have that ish to him, where it's like, I'm not going to wow you with throws I make. I'm not going to dazzle you with any kind of, crazy runs. I'm just going to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the job done. And it unfortunately came against your Bears who, look, there's a lot to like. There really was. There's a lot to like. I mean, you score on the opening drive for the first time in 2 years. I mean, that's the automatic Ben Johnson effect. Now it's going to have to be, can you do this when it's not?
The question is, can you coach this out of him? Can you coach the reversion, what he reverted back to that we saw all year last year, can you coach that out of him? That's the question. But again, it goes back to Ben's got more than just his quarterback to worry about. You got a team that committed, again, 12 penalties, 127 yards, whatever it was.
Exactly.
That kills you just as much.
Line of scrimmage was bad. I mean, it was just bad. All the little things, right? That's the problem with Caleb is like he doesn't do the little things well. He'll make the big plays, he'll make the big throws, but like he doesn't want to,
They didn't convert a third until the fourth quarter, 12-13 left in the game.
That's crazy. And they won.
Yeah, and as I go back to, you have to focus, again, because we focus on the relevant teams in the end, on the effort by the Vikings. And the equity that J.J. got last night, just in terms of in that locker room, everybody within that franchise now, okay, we got the right dude. When you see something like that in his debut,
yep,
You know, that's Steve Young, only quarterbacks in the past 45 years to overcome a double-digit deficit in the fourth quarter of their debut and win.
That's amazing.
Very impressive.
Well, and one thing I noticed, I got to say.
By J.J. McCarthy efforts.
When they were down 7, it was very early in the game. But when they were down 7-0, Kevin O'Connell's on the sideline. Mm-hmm. He's doing the interview. And, you know, a lot of times, like, you know, you kind of hear coaches hedge. Like, they'll say things along the lines of, hey, listen, we got to be better. You know, we're going to change some things up. You know, we feel pretty good about where we're at. You know, all we got to do is go out there and execute it. Some version of that. Kevin O'Connell said, oh, we're fine. J.J. McCarthy's going to lead his home touchdown drive here. We'll be just fine. Like, what? Golly. I mean, you just don't hear coaches talk so assuredly about a guy that's never made a start in his NFL career like that. And he didn't end up doing it there. I think he led him to 3 instead of 7. But it's like, it just kind of showed, like, my God. I mean, there's real confidence in that young man in that building, which is just rare. And I think you saw it.
Well, it was validation for them.
Yeah, 100%. Right? 100%.
Because you had the chance to go over Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, even keep Darnold.
But and then they decided to move on from Darnold. But then it felt like Aaron was sort of waiting on them to see before the whole. And so you have that chance. You're tempted by that, whatever else. You're talking about a team, too, that moved on from Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
And so they put a lot in saying, I mean, you've made J.J. what he ended up being, a top 10 pick.
Absolutely.
And so you've invested in him as an organization, as a head coach, but as a front office particularly. And it was a validation to see it. I mean, especially after it's going so bad. And that doubt is probably, it has to be creeping in. What have we done? Is this guy going to, maybe it's not even doubt. Maybe they still believe, but you're concerned.
Absolutely.
When you're seeing as bad as it was for the Vikings for about 2.5, 3 quarters. But that kid, unbelievable in turning around. And it just goes to show you, man, there's something to leadership, winning, everything else. I've sat up here and said J.J. McCarthy didn't throw to one whole side of the field at Michigan. And there's no, you know, NFL quarterback, we'll see, had my doubt. A lot of times it's leadership, it's the intangibles, it's the Jalen Hurts example, like you said, just getting it done. But more importantly, having those 52 other guys, you know, on that 53, believing that you're the right guy for the gig.
Exactly.
And man, in terms of that equity he built up last night, now they believe more than
they're
ever.
They're all in now.
Now they are all in.
Yeah.
So they're full steam ahead.
Minnesota's a problem. Minnesota's going to be a problem.
Justin Jefferson's not, you know, he's no Malik Nabers that's looking and when we gonna
exactly.
go to, you know, he's no, even
he
after the pick
the
six,
process.
Even after pick six, he's like, no, this is my guy. We're gonna, after what he just saw. And he went on Scott Van Pelt and he ripped for dude. Like he just,
I mean, we
got our guy.
I mean,
and
I hate
when you
that
hear
it came
that.
Against your team, but it feels like we genuinely saw the blossom of a, you know,
1,000%.
The next great one.
I couldn't help but feel good for the young man, even, you know, forget me, the whole country probably doubting him for a large portion of that game. You're back home. That's where he's from.
Mm.
You know, everybody's saying you're a non-thrower.
Yep.
Vikings made a mistake on you. And so to see him turn it around and have that kind of belief in his eyes, man, that's, you can't, even as the losing team there, even with the disappointing quarterback, I can't hate on that man. That was impressive. Now, does that mean he's done? You know, it's a finished product. The Vikings are all of a sudden going to take off offensively? No.
Yep.
He's clearly got some, you know, we were throwing some stuff at him early that had him rattled.
Yep.
And other teams are going to do that until you get more of a book on him. You know, you're really going to see things turned up on him. We'll see how he responds. But what a response it was last night.
Absolutely.
Historic type of response from the young man.
Warren Sharp had a tweet, completion percentage over expected. Number one in the NFL this week was actually Jalen Hurts, 15.2% completion percentage over expected. Coming in at the bottom, there is a tie at the bottom, minus 13.2% completion percentage over expected. Bryce Young, Caleb Williams, tie for the worst in the NFL.
Yeah, y'all, Chicago's fourth loss in the last four seasons when entering the fourth quarter with a double-digit lead. That's twice as many as any other team over that span.
Good Lord.
Twice as many. This is what I endure. And unfortunately, I mean, the dumb decision, the regretful decision to include my son.
That's right.
Why don't I just let him pick a team on his own?
I mean, you think he would have? You think he would have picked a different team?
And it's not like I just put up all Bears stuff in his room or something.
He should pick the Packers.
It's just, but I did, you know, I didn't take him to a Saints game or a Falcons game.
Oh, you're taking somewhere. Saints game.
Titans game. Well, just because they're around here, I ain't flying to go to.
Don't do that to them.
Flying to KC. So
at least they're the.
How much those
game.
Tickets cost? What does it cost to go to Baltimore? You think I'm going to fly them to see Lamar Jackson? Pick your team, son. Let's take a tour
options.
Around the league.
I mean, Saints, Falcons.
No, I'm,
Titans.
It's where I'm can drive to, bro. You keep forgetting. I'm a normal man.
I still
in terms of means.
Bears, best option of those four. Titans, Falcons, Saints, Bears. Give me the Bears. Titans are a mess. Saints are hopeless. Falcons finally got a little juice now with Penix.
So I tried to encourage the young man. Said, well, at least our fantasy team came through and beat Gabe Kuhn. He said, fantasy ain't real.
Damn.
And he's the general manager, co-general manager of our team.
Oh, you've put him in charge.
Yeah, Gabe was questioning. I heard him laughing about our young roster before in the buildup. To our matchup, we'll just know an 11-year-old drafted that roster and it beat you.
Damn.
Now, fantasy, Smiths can have their way. Real stuff? Now, Caleb ain't going to let me.
Yeah.
That real football that Gabe Brewer did play?
Yeah.
Y'all know I broke my shoulder. It's no part of it. Bears. Down. We down.
Bears down.
We are down. Bears down. That's what I said. We are down.
Bears down.
I'm down. Help.
Help, man.
Yeah. Take us out on OJ's. Help me. Help.
I need
please take us out on OJ's. Help.
Yeah.
As
man.
We get to just some. Just, do you have it? Can we? I don't know how fast we can do those things around here.
Well, I.
There it is.
Now you're feeling it, man.
Old school grooves to make you feel a little better, right?
Let it hit
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Because I mean, look, I sit here.
Y'all all won.
I'm a winner. Geno Smith, black quarterback, exciting.
Yep.
Juice.
I still don't like that word, but it was for you, 3-something.
342 yards.
That's got to be exciting.
I mean, we were making all the throws. He was second. He was third in completion percentage over expected, 9% over expected. And he don't have no Roma Dunze. He's got freaking Brock Bowers and disgruntled Jacoby.
We got so many weapons out there, Luther Burden can't even get on the field.
Can't even touch the field, man.
It's crazy.
So, look, man, I know you're a stubborn guy and you're not going to abandon the Bears, but
no,
I'm down.
I think the silver and black have a lot of intriguing things for you.
I had to come to grips with today and sort of the acknowledgement that I was going to, that you guys are better than us right now.
Now
there's no question.
We've been doing this show for.
I am one to give it to you.
Eight years, and I think that's probably the first time that sentence has ever been true.
Yep.
That's really a changing of the guard.
That's where we are.
Damn.
We'll come back. Jessica Benson's going to join us on the other side. We'll talk to her about the NFL weekend and more. Stick around. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
670 The Score's Mullen Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullen Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Jessica Benson is the host of the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt on Grind City Media. Nice enough to join us every single Tuesday here on the show. Jessica, I want to read you a tweet. Now I want you to tell me who it's from.
Okay.
You're like a chronically online person, right? Like I kind of see you as that.
I am.
Right.
So I am. I'm trying to be better post vacation, but we'll see if I've done well.
I went wedding dress shopping and missed a 9 overtime game. This is why all things wedding related should be banned in the fall. who tweeted it?
Me.
You did. You did. Round of applause.
I did.
You tweeted October 23rd, 2021 at 3:26 p.m. And, 4 years later.
I remember it well.
4 years later, where did you find yourself in the fall?
At a wedding in the first weekend of the college football season.
So let me ask you, is this, rules for thee, not for me? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what our psychology here is and when we're willing to excuse wedding-related things in the fall and when we are not.
So I'm actually trying to become a better person with this. You know, it's just football at the end of the day. That hurts me to say, but if it's somebody's one chance to have the wedding of their dreams and it falls on a college football Saturday, who am I to say that they shouldn't do that? And for me, that was my own wedding dress shopping appointment back in 2021. What was that? Was that the Illinois Penn State game, if I remember correctly?
All right, I'm not that sick, okay?
It was a long time ago, but I mean, I think that's the only 9 overtime game.
Had to be, yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah, haven't been many of those.
Yeah, so that was a me choice. That was a me decision.
Yeah, that was it.
And
yep.
Now I'm trying to understand that, you know, the world does not revolve around us, and not everybody loves college football. Now I will say, this wedding that I was at, it was my one like tried and true friend that I thought would never betray me and would never get married during the college football season. But then she ended up finding a husband who isn't a football fan, which is insane. What a waste. What a waste of my friend who would have sat and watched football all day, every day, all weekend long. But yeah, so anyway, they wanted to get married in Italy. And if you get married in Italy in the summer, it's going to be 115 degrees. And we had a nice balmy 85 degree day in Tuscany and watched a little football on our phones by the Tuscan countryside. And it was a beautiful way to ring in the season.
It really does. And I'm not trying – I'm the guy that when I was in Vegas last month, me and this guy got into it at the poker table, and he said his name was Gaston, and he accused me of having no culture. I don't want to get into why. I don't want to get into the particulars, but he accused me of having no culture. I'm setting this up, but when you say that her husband is not a football fan, like I don't have any friends that aren't fans of sports. Like, I don't have
a single friend, because I would say the majority of my friends are not into sports.
It's just amazing to me that people out there, like I mean this, and like I admire it that you can go through the day and have absolutely no idea what's going on in the world of sports. It's like that willful ignorance is something that I pursue every day, but I have yet to find.
I can't do it. It just pulls me right back in, and I'm back in full psycho mode. I mean, literally, like I was so thrilled that we had nothing on our weekend schedule this weekend, our first weekend back. And we tried to be productive Saturday morning, and we were successful at that. But then I sat and I watched a full day of college football, followed by a full day of NFL, followed by a Monday night football game last night. And I was very content with that.
Yeah, me too. Congrats, champ, on your season opening win in our fantasy football league. You have Justin.
Just trying to defend the belt.
You have a great quarterback, it appears, in Justin Herbert, who I believe delivered for you. In terms of the things you saw through all those days of NFL watching and through this first week one, what stood out the most? I'm sure Herbert and beating Kansas City is up there. In terms of everything else, what stood out the most?
Well, I am a notorious Justin Herbert truther, supporter, believer. So it was a fun way for the season to it began on the Friday night. I know we had the game Thursday, whatnot, but to see Justin Herbert under the bright lights playing the Chiefs in an international game and to come up with the game sealing play and to just play really well. Like I remain steadfast that Justin Herbert is a special quarterback and will ultimately lead to special postseason moments at some point in his career. But I also get that it's hard to get people on board until that moment happens. So that was fun for me to see at the beginning. Obviously, the Bills-Ravens game was spectacular, and you never want to be a prisoner of the moment of just watching a game. But you're watching it, and you just think, this is one of the best regular season games that I've ever seen. Or certainly one of the best openers that we've ever seen, and the thought of the playoff implications and perhaps those teams meet again down the road. Just, you know, to see Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen dueling it out as two of the elite quarterbacks in the game right now was very special. And you throw in the Derrick Henry of it all, and it's truly a giveth and taketh situation where he's just unstoppable. And then he has that fumble, which ultimately swings the momentum of the game and allows the Bills to start their comeback. So that was great. And then to cap it off with the J.J. McCarthy turnaround, I admittedly closed my eyes about midway through the third quarter. It must have been right around when J.J. McCarthy rallied his troops in the middle of the huddle down 11 and said, "Where else would you rather be?" And then brought him back. So the way that this works is we'll like go to bed to watch the second half of a game, and I'll close my eyes and fall asleep because I can fall asleep to the sweet lullaby of football, and Chris will keep watching. And I swear you can, like, I have a second sense of feeling when a game gets good, and so I kind of wake up in the last minute.
Oh, it's nice.
And I'll be like, "What happened?" in my mid sleep, and Chris will be like, "Oh my God, the Vikings came back and won this game, and JJ McCarthy was awesome." And it felt so dreamlike. I was like, "Certainly, that's not reality. Like I'm dreaming. That didn't actually happen." And then waking up this morning and getting fully caught up was very fun. So I just think football is awesome. It rules. Like, this is why we do it. This is why it's so much fun. And we had a very great week one.
Yeah, two straight primetime games where, like, I'm assuming most people just gave up on the game and woke up to just, you know, pure chaos unfolding. You know, that happens in college football every week. You know, like, no, we know no lead is safe in college football, but like, NFL, there's an expected sort of precise execution, right? Like, if a team is up 10 going into the fourth quarter, like, you just assume that's the end of the game, right? Like, they may make it 7, they may make it 3, but you just expect the team that's winning. But I think are you somebody that would say that they're a bigger fan of college football than NFL?
Probably, if I had to get down to it. And I think you're nailing it, because what I love about college football is the chaos meter, right? Like, the way I realized I was fully entrenched back in football season in its totality was middle of Saturday afternoon, and Clemson is down to Troy, and Kentucky's challenging Ole Miss, and South Florida's challenging Florida, and I'm just, like, giddy. I'm just waving my feet over the couch because I'm short and they don't touch the ground, and I'm like, oh, this is what it's all about, like the chaos meter of what can happen on any given Saturday. And you're right, oftentimes on the NFL side, that's far fewer. It's more the technicality and the execution of it all, and throwing the fantasy football component makes it always very fun to be engaged in all the games throughout the day. I'm a big red zone fan. But, yeah, I think from the college football side of it, it's just the nutso nature of college football that makes it so special to me. And obviously, having grown up in that space, I think it's kind of in my genetic coding.
For sure. Memphis football is 2-0. Memphis football is 2-0 against the spread. Hard to ask for a better start. I don't know if you were watching from, you know, Tuscany or wherever you were in the Chattanooga game. But from what you have seen of these Memphis football Tigers, what do you think?
I was very frustrated in Tuscany because ESPN didn't even have a box score up for Memphis Chattanooga. So it made it very difficult to even follow it in real time.
No game cast.
I mean, I don't think you can take anything super concrete with Memphis so far. You'd be devastated if they weren't 2-0. And the first half of that game against Georgia State was not the most tantalizing half of football that would lead you to be particularly excited. However, they turned it around in the second half, and they shut them out. And to see, obviously, this is a run-first team, and they have a lot of weapons in the run game that feel like they can take off, and Sutton Smith kind of taking that RB1 role, and I hope DeRosier comes back soon. Brendan Lewis is going to be a run-first quarterback. I think, what do? Throw the ball 20 times in the win for Memphis on Saturday. So that's something interesting that we really haven't had that kind of a quarterback at Memphis in a long time, if not forever. But then I'm just really curious, like, does one of these receivers emerge as a true number one threat? Where's the consistency coming from when you are ultimately going to face an SEC team in Arkansas 2 weeks from now? And the level of the play, you know, increases, and the difficult level increases. So I'm curious. I hope they don't get sniped by Troy this week. Troy looked fairly better than expected against Clemson, but Clemson also just looked inept in that game. And how much were they not throwing out there? I don't know. I'm not afraid to goose the quarterback for Troy. I'll put it that way. But, you know, this is where you want to be if you're Memphis. You have those two games on the schedule so far. If you don't win them, you're in shambles. So you just keep moving forward and hope that you're in a position where you have a very competitive game at 11 a.m. against Arkansas in 2 weeks.
In terms of the SEC, Jess, if we were doing power rankings, we'd probably have LSU. I mean, they're number 3 in the country, and they went and they got a win at Clemson. We'll see how good Clemson is, but you probably have LSU up top. But in terms of your heart, in terms of you look at the SEC, you know, what's at the top, it feels wide open. Who do you think is the best team in the SEC?
I mean, you're never going to count out Georgia at this point, and just coaching and experience at this time, I'm not going to get caught doubting the Bulldogs. I really, this is a true heart of the matter because he's equal parts talented and crazy, but I've loved John Mateer, the Oklahoma quarterback, since he played at Washington State. And watching that game against Michigan last weekend was a reminder of what I enjoy about his play. And he's the kind of guy who can, you know, put you in a situation where you can go out, win the game. He could also lose you the game. So I'm not sure from the consistency standpoint, if you're looking at the end of the season and Oklahoma really is having an opportunity at taking the SEC. I think the bottom line, it just feels like so much SEC on SEC crime can happen throughout the season where someone's going to beat someone that they are not supposed to. I mean, what if Mississippi State jumps up and is able to carry over the momentum from the win over Arizona State and gets a surprise win over one of these ranked SEC teams? It's the SEC for a reason. So I refuse to put all my hope in the LSU basket, but maybe Brian Kelly will prove me wrong, and at the end of the year, they really are the best team in the SEC.
If Billy Napier is canned, and we figure it's only a matter of time, you lose to South Florida, you got players spitting on the other guys, who's your first call, Jess?
I mean, I would hate to say it from the standpoint of a team that is currently enjoying the fruits of the excitement of being the non-power conference team of the moment, which is South Florida, but it's probably going to be Alex Golish. Like, he has turned into the smaller school, the non-power school coach of the moment, and what he's done at South Florida, and he's just down the street. And that would be just so Florida football, SEC football, go snipe the coach that just delivered a huge upset win over the weekend for the Bulls. So that would probably be my first call if I were them, because that's where, you know, if you are able to capitalize. And listen, at this point, Florida knows from experience that doesn't always work out either. Like, at one point, Billy Napier was the coach of the moment, or one of the coaches of the moment, following his time at Louisiana. And you can never bank on it working at the next level, but I really like Golish. I think he has a lot of promise.
That would be your first call?
Who are you calling?
That's the answer to our question.
There ain't no way that's your first call. It's Florida football. All right, it's not
Florida football.
It's not Duke football.
Get ready. Here it comes.
I'm not saying that you don't call Alex Golish, but damn. So when you were in your single days, when you went to the bar, you said, I'm just gonna find the first four I see, and that's just gonna be what my night is.
I'm sorry. Do you want my other one? Do you want to call Dan Mullen back?
No.
You want to bring him back?
Jessica, you call Lane Kiffin. You call him.
Okay, sir. You call Lane Kiffin.
No, but
Kiffin.
You said you want to
if
call
you're Lane Kiffin.
You're settling.
Are you leaving
you just
Ole Miss
settle.
For Florida?
You just settle. You're like, hey, well, you don't know.
Like, realism.
No. It's Florida football. You got multiple national championships. I mean, and you have the state of Florida in recruiting. I'm not saying you get him, but you gotta call him. I mean, you're just ready to get to the.
Okay, fine. You have your call. Obviously, you have an unlimited minutes plan, so you're gonna call, waste the minutes.
Exactly.
And
Alex
then you're
Golish,
probably gonna call
thank
Alex
you, Jess.
Golish.
I mean, look.
Waste
first of all,
minute.
Alex Golish will crawl naked over broken glass to get that job. You don't even have to call him. You can just send him a text. All right, and say, hey, whatever. Be at the press conference. But I see what kind of time you were on back in the day. You were just like, first three or whatever mouth breather walks up to me, I'll give them the time of day. Absolutely not. Absolutely. We got to have standards here for Florida football. I'd call Lane. I would call Urban Meyer.
I was going to say, Jessica, what would you say about
the
situation if they hired
Urban?
You're calling
Urban Meyer in the year 2025?
Yep. Look, he's done it. He's done it multiple places. I mean, he's only 61.
Oh, my God.
He's only 61. He ain't that old.
You want to know the biggest burn
UNC
I heard
UNC hired
the weekend.
Bill Belichick, and everybody lost their minds over it. They thought it was the best hire ever.
And how's that worked out for them?
Oh, well, he's a disaster. He was a disaster. In fairness.
And Urban Meyer's not. I would put word disaster next to Urban Meyer at
the
point.
He was with the Jaguars. I give you that. But in college, where he's done, Bill Belichick's never done college.
Sure, until everything starts seeping out of the walls and you learn everything that was going on.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, almost. I have health
have
issues.
Have I killed you?
You about
put him down.
I have health issues just like Urban. Those have been, I think, reconciled, and again, he may not do it, but I would call a lot of people. I mean, I'm not saying Alex Golish is not a good candidate, but imagine if, how many programs around the country, they had no idea that somebody would actually go. You got to try. Again, maybe we're at a place now where Ole Miss is close enough to you know, that level, that there's no reason for Lane to ever leave. That may be 100% true. He makes a ton of money. You know, that's the thing. NIL is the great equalizer, right? And I do think that kind of hurts a place like Florida football. Where it's like, if you know, there's really, if Ole Miss may actually even have more NIL. I don't know what the situation is down there, you know? And so if that's the case, like, that's how you keep guys nowadays. So Florida calls Lane. They say, hey, Lane, we want to give you the job. All right, let me go talk to my people in the Grove, my boosters, whatever. You know, these guys have nothing else to do besides pump money into Ole Miss. They say, all right, Lane, we'll give you a $5 million a year raise, and we'll commit $10 million more to you in NIL. Well, then you don't go. I mean, that's the problem for Florida with anybody except Alex Golish, which may be where this ends up anyway. your favorite hire of the decade.
Yeah.
No,
the well feels – I'm trying to think of legitimate other options. If it's not Lane, is there anybody else right now at a Power 4 university that would feel like their tenure or their excitement level at their current place of employment is fragile enough that they would leave for Florida? Because it's a hard job, too.
Oh, that's not a hard job.
Yes, it is.
It's a hard job for people that can't do the job. But
I don't think he would leave at this point. But like a Jed Fish at Washington, like is he?
I wouldn't even.
Would he follow?
We're not. See, that's a call we're not making. We're not calling Jed Fish.
Okay.
All right. I mean,
what about
1 year at Arizona?
Graham Brown.
Oh, the Syracuse coach. Oh, you're
the Syracuse coach. I like him.
My God. I mean, do you think Florida football is like a cellar dweller?
I want you
or something?
To give me other tangible. You're shooting all these guys down. Give me another tangible option here.
Dillingham.
Dillingham's lost a little luster after that loss this weekend, but he would have been
just
prior to this
he's
weekend.
Still a riser. Would you?
No, 100%.
Would he leave Arizona State for 100%. Florida? Absolutely.
Dillingham is actually
this
a great.
Is a guy that
he's
would
a
be,
great because he would bring some energy.
Mm-hmm.
He would bring some real
young
energy. You know, and he's been in the playoff already. You know,
as that on his
went
resume,
toe to toe with Texas.
Right. It will never be that good again for Arizona mm-hmm. State. It's about what
that's
he's got
exactly
on the resume.
Right. That is exactly
you know, right,
right
now. Frankly, he probably needs to capitalize on it before it, you know,
really
before some of that luster comes off.
It doesn't necessarily like make sense regionally, but you know, I think absolutely he would leave.
I'm with you. John didn't want to hear my goalish yesterday. My goalish yesterday
just
all
like a
day.
Settle. Like
I'm with you.
I just put myself in a Florida booster shoe. I'm like, bro, I don't want to do the Power 5 hire again. We just did it with Napier and he stunk.
But Sumrall down at Tulane seems to be on these lists, and I think Golish, to your point, has put himself back on these lists. Jess, that's where I'm with you based on what he's done the first 2 weeks, and he's got a free shot this week at Miami. What kind of chance do you give South Florida? We didn't ask you about them.
Oh, listen here. After giving all this hype on Alex Golish, yeah, I think South Florida might be flirting a little close to the sun at the moment. I'm not as high on them as a team in their totality. I think defensively, actually, they're far more impressive as a unit than the offensive side of the ball. I would expect. What's the line on the Miami South Florida?
16.5. Same, basically the same as
16
Florida.
16.5.
Go.
I might take Miami.
Go with Miami to cover. You were exactly right, because if you are South Florida, I know pride's one thing. It's Florida and everything else, but you've made your season already. And if you go out and get Byron Brown hurt trying to beat Miami, and you can't win the AAC right after the position you've put yourself in, I'm still going to give that fiery pregame speech, but I would be very careful with my guys.
A little less fiery.
Yeah, and making sure I got enough coming out of that game to win the AAC because the American, right? Because at this point, that's what it's about. I'm going
to
make the
I'm happy
the
to hear
playoff.
You still call it the AAC, too, because
yeah,
it really keeps getting me. No, I'm doing the same thing. So I got to get used to the A.
It's one of those things. Like it took me probably like 2 years. I still like to call it the Liberty Bowl, you know?
I still say USC's in the Pac-12, so, you know, it happens.
Well, no, you killed the Pac-12. It's like you're sitting there in the doorway with the knife, with bleeding. The knife has blood dripping off of it. You're saying that USC's still in the Pac-12. I mean, that's just not even right.
No one's talking about how USC scored like 99 points through the first 2 weeks of the season, but that's okay. That's where we like to be.
Who they play?
Don't ask questions.
Yeah, they play like a bunch of the Sisters of the Blind and Deaf.
Georgia Southern, the Clay Helton return game.
That's right.
Well, Missouri State hung 73 on Missouri State.
God, I mean, it won't get real until September 27th. USC unranked, by the way. Man, you were talking about a program.
Thank God, finally, an appropriate lead into the season. They should be unranked. Please.
You mentioned Memphis and Arkansas, 11 a.m. I mean, I think the expectation around here was that it was always going to be an 11 a.m. game, just because they're not going to give Memphis a night game against an SEC team. Are you a fan of the 11 a.m. kick? Generally,
I am not usually a fan of the 11 a.m. kick. I'm actually going to the Alabama-Wisconsin game this weekend. My friends and I got $45 tickets, and we've never been to Bryant-Denny, and we just pulled the trigger on them on Saturday because, you know, real junkie status. And so we're going to drive out that morning and then drive home afterwards. And I'm not usually a fan of an 11 a.m. game, but that allows me to go to that game, so I will take it in that regard. For the Memphis-Arkansas game, I wish it was in the either middle of the afternoon or an evening game would have been asking far too much. It's just hard to get the energy up at 11 a.m. It just always is. Like, anytime you go to a game, it does not have the same feeling if it is at 11 a.m. as if it were at any of the other time periods. So it'll still be exciting, and I'll be there. I plan to be at Memphis-Arkansas. I would just enjoy it more if there was more of an opportunity, because it comes from people tailgating going into the game.
No doubt.
Like, I even feel a little robbed at the Alabama experience. I'm not going to see the full Alabama tailgating situation.
No doubt. I mean, because you got to get in your car and go at 9 o'clock to get down to the game. You know, I mean, that's crazy. Like, to leave my house at 9 a.m. for a football game. I feel like I'm watching, like, the Pee Wee. You know, I feel like I'm watching the Elmore Park Packers or something. You know, it just doesn't feel normal to me, but we'll be there. Yeah, we'll.
Yeah, I mean, did you see on the like complete opposite end of the spectrum, the USC Michigan State game is going to be an 8 p.m. kick Pacific time, West Coast time, which is 11 o'clock Eastern time, which is insane.
That's what you guys wanted. I mean, that, you know, that's just what these leagues signed up for. They didn't care about these kids' well-being and health and, you know, equilibrium and circadian rhythm. They didn't care about any of that. They just wanted to get the money.
Yeah.
You know,
true.
So, I mean, I don't know how you live with yourself taking that blood money, you know, the aristocrats around here, but you'll do it. You'll sleep, I guess, and cry yourself to sleep with the money and the dollar bills. So, yeah, we'll be
in the Big Ten.
It's like that college football basketball marathon that went 24 hours. Let's get the 2 a.m. football game going. You know, that's coming.
What a reference.
That's coming. I don't remember what they called it. I know Memphis had like a
24 hours of hoops.
Yeah, like Memphis had like a game against Miami at like 11 o'clock or something. I remember that. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was like the coolest thing in the world.
That was fun.
And now as an adult, I'm like, why would they make anyone do that?
No, you're right. But it was fun. I mean, I remember that Miami game. Anyway, you're the best, Jessica. Thanks for doing
this.
Thank you,
Jessica.
Welcome back to the States.
Thanks, guys. Yep. Thank you. Yep. See you later.
She's Jessica Benson, host of the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt on Grind City Media. I think that might have been your first year on the beat. Does that sound right?
Yeah, probably was. I remember being down in Miami. I guess that was part of that 24 hours.
It was 20 to 10.
Didn't they have a home and home with Miami? I want to say, what? Not maybe, is that what it was for a year? For 2 years, maybe I'm making that up, but I don't think they went down there for a visiting game.
Yeah, it tipped off at 11 o'clock in Memphis.
Okay,
and it was
that's the return game. So that was a home and home series we had with the Hurricanes.
72-68. How about that? A crowd of 17,783. I know, it's crazy to think, but
different times.
Memphis basketball was still popping back then, man.
Well, yeah,
that
COVID did a number.
670 The Score's Mullen Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullen Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.